So Bob is an old friend, and his wife and I were like besties. Her name was Connie also. So we were one and two. And so we were both in the paper because of Durspan poisoning. She was poisoned and my son was poisoned. We both were in the newspaper and somebody called the other one and we met and we just hit it off. And then they moved up to upstate New York and bought an organic farm. And I would go up there. Sometimes I took Lisa, I took the kids, I think we stopped in and just had a great time on the farm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. So as each of us travel down this road of life, we may find that the road is not always straight and easily traveled. We may encounter potholes, bumps, twists, turns, construction ahead signs, and detour signs. How we deal with these hindrances could determine the quality and the direction of our lives. God will often prepare us for what is ahead. If we make a wrong turn, the road may get a little bumpy. Sometimes God allows a bumpy road so our faith can be strengthened, our character can be more fully developed, and maybe we can even help others on their journey as well. My story today is about how God prepared me for a future bump in the road by giving me information which I used at the time of my heart attack in 2005. I got this information well before 2000, up to 20 years before, and I knew about it, and I was able to use it in 2005. So let's go on to the next part here. Okay, a little bit of background. My grandfather, I think it was back in the 1980s, he had a blockage in his aorta. As the aorta comes out of the heart and it goes down into the abdomen and branches out into the legs, that's where the blockage was. And so they replaced that with a synthetic branch in that area. So that was what happened to him. Now, my father, who had a heart attack and he had open heart surgery, and I think he had three blockages. And what they did, they opened his chest up, removed the blockaged veins, and then replaced it with veins that they took from his legs and put those in the heart. So that's what the open heart surgery does. And then he also, in his 80s, he had a blockage in his aortic branch right near where my grandfather did, as it branches out to the, I guess it's in the lower abdomen area, it branches out to the legs. But right in that area, I was told that there's only 2% of the people, I guess worldwide, that don't have more than one artery supplying blood flow to the colon. So what they did when they fixed my father's blocked aorta, they put in a stent. And when they put that stent in, they blocked an artery. And he happened to be one of the 2% that didn't have a second artery coming from there feeding the colon. So they got no blood flow to the colon. So that night, the night that he had his surgery on his aorta, they did another surgery, emergency surgery on his colon to replace, to take out the dead portions because it got no blood supply. So his colon was dead. They took it out and they replaced it with a colostomy bag. My father lasted 2 weeks and then he passed. So that's kind of the history of what happened in my family there. Now, when I graduated high school, I went to college and I became a mechanical engineer. I got a mechanical engineering degree. And from there, I went to work for Westinghouse, Stone & Webster, and Fluor Daniel, three large manufacturing and engineering and construction companies. And during that time that I was working there, I was like a field service engineer, and I went to a number around the country. And even in some foreign countries in this as well, like Puerto Rico, I went to power plants that were gas, oil, and coal fired. That's how they got made the heat for the steam turbine that made the steam with gas, oil, or coal. And then also, I visited a number of nuclear power plants some chemical plants, and a number of refineries. So, and why I'm saying that is because there's a very good likely chance that I got some contamination from chemicals during that period of time, which could cause some physical problems, which I didn't even know about back then. But with all that work in these different types of, you know, plants with pollution and chemicals, that could have affected me and brought on that 2005 heart attack, or at least helped it along. So then I want to go into the first time I heard about chelation therapy. I don't know whether you've ever heard about that, but the first time I ever heard about this was back in probably the mid-1980s. And a friend of the family had been going to a doctor, and he told me this story. Just out of the blue, he tells me this story, probably, you know, like 20 years before my heart attack, that he was in the waiting room of Dr. Magaziner, who has an office in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and he performs chelation therapy. And back then, I don't think hardly anybody ever heard of it. So he was telling me he was in the waiting room sitting there with the other patients around waiting to get treated as well. And there was a woman there sitting next to him, and her feet and ankles were all black. And he looks down and he says, "What is that?" And she says, "That's gangrene. That's nothing compared to what it was. It was all the way up to her knees before." So she goes, she's been going to Dr. Magaziner. Like I said, he does chelation therapy, and the gangrene is retreating down her leg. So from her knee area all the way back down now to her ankles, when this friend of mine actually saw her in the office. So let's see. Let's go to, well, what is chelation therapy? And before I do that, there's one more story I have here. I used to listen to a Philadelphia radio station, and the commentator's name was, the host was Irv Homer. I don't know whether you've ever heard of him or the Philadelphia radio station, but who told the story about a heart attack that he had had. And he was a pretty heavy set guy, and he was very, very emotional about, you know, the Federal Reserve and the IRS and, you know, taxes and all this stuff. But he had a heart attack, and I don't know exactly when he had it, but he told the story probably that I heard it on the radio was back in the early to mid 1990s. And so this Irv Homer told the story about a heart attack, and he went to the hospital, and the hospital did, you know, some tests on him, and they recommended that he get a quadruple bypass, heart bypass. And he told them, "There is no way that I am going to let you cut me open." And he already knew. He told the story about how he already knew about chelation therapy from Dr. Magaziner in New Jersey. And he was going to get the chelation therapy. So he went there and he got it. And I don't know exactly when he had the heart attack, but it was in the early to mid 1990s that I was still listening to him. And he was doing very well. So that's the second time. The first time was in the 1980s, probably mid-1980s, from a friend with that story about the lady with the gangrene in her legs. And then so the second time I heard about chelation therapy was from Irv Homer on the radio talk show, and that was in the 1990s. And this was quite a ways, like another 10 years before I had my heart attack. So let me go on to the next thing here. So what is chelation therapy? Since the 1950s, chelation therapy has been used for the removal of iron, arsenic, mercury, and lead poisoning. However, more recently, chelation therapy has been used to treat other ailments such as arthritis, heart disease, strokes, macular degeneration, and diabetic circulation problems, and the gangrene that may go along with that. Chelation therapy involves weekly treatments of ethylene diamine tetraacetic acid.
What are the initials of that?
That's what I was just going to say. The short version of that is EDTA.
Oh, okay.
And that is infused in the vein. Each treatment can last from 30 up to 2 hours, 30 minutes up to 2 hours. It is infused into the arm, similar to a bag of saline solution. The EDTA is an amino acid that binds with the metals and the minerals in the bloodstream. This process creates a substance that is removed from the body in the urine within 24 hours. So once you have the infusion, and it removes the certain minerals and metals from your body, that is removed in your urine within 24 hours. So chelation therapy can treat heart disease because the EDTA binds to and removes the calcium found in deposits that clog the arteries. Bypass surgery and stents treat one small area right where the blockage is. That's what they do. They put a stent in to bypass the, to cover up the blockage. And they also do bypass surgery to remove the blocked artery and put in a new piece. So it only covers those areas, whereas chelation therapy treats the whole circulatory system. And what and that would be with a from cardiovascular diseases, arterial plaque that contains calcium. So it treats all that. And it is recommended to get follow-up maintenance chelation once a month. So that's what they recommended when I was getting my chelation therapy. Let me go on to another piece of my history there. We had a termite treatment on our house in New Jersey in May of 1994, and they used a chemical called Dursban, and it was it turned out that they found out it was a neurotoxin, and since then, Dursban has been removed from the commercial market for like termite treatments and grubs and all that in your lawn and everything. That's how they used it, and that's what they used on our house. When we got the termite treatment, they would the cinder blocks in the basement. They drill each cell in the cinder block. They drill a hole and around the entire perimeter of the basement inside, and then they pump in the Dursban. And then they go outside with a 4 foot wand, and every 10 inches around the perimeter of your house, they poke the wand down in the ground, the 4 feet, and then they pump the Dursban in the ground that creates a barrier so the termites can't come in. And so I was in the house, and well, my wife was in the house at the time of the treatment. I was at work, so she got the full dose, and that's where she ended up getting multiple chemical sensitivity, which is it's like you're allergic to or sensitized to the in her case, petrochemicals. So she became sensitized to the chemicals, all petrochemicals. And it was unbelievable. She was never the same person after that. She was totally different. And so I was under, and she was also under extreme stress for about 10 years from 1994 to 2005 when I had the heart attack. So I was under extreme stress. We barely lived in the house. We actually had the house for another 7 or 8 years, and we lived in it occasionally. We were living in other places here and there as we could, but we would come back to the house, and she would have problems. And so eventually, we found some property up in New York, and that was in 2000. And we bought that property and moved up there in 2003, and we sold the house down in New Jersey. So then, through I believe it was. The maybe the chemicals that I came in contact with through my work in the earlier years, as far and also the stress from going through all this with my wife getting this MCS, and it was extreme stress. And I'm a very calm person, but it was extreme for me, really extreme, like nothing I'd ever done or seen before. Now let me say number three. Yeah, number three. So I have had three heart attacks. The first heart attack happened in 2005. I had no prior symptoms that alerted me that there was a problem. Until the day of the heart attack, I was picking up a couple of 50-pound bags. I wanted 4 bags of grain to feed it because we had chickens and goats at that time. So I was getting some bags of grain, and they were 50 pounds. And I felt very weak. So I, instead of getting 4 bags, I just got 2 and just left. And then later that day, after I got home, I had 2 episodes of shortness of breath. And my wife and I decided I should probably go to this hospital and have it looked at. So we went to a local hospital, and there they did the EKG and the CAT scan and blood tests. And they said that I had, from the CAT scan, they said that I had some blocked arteries. One was 90% blocked, another was 80% blocked, and the third one was 70% blocked. And they said I did have a heart attack. And so they recommended a triple bypass. So that's what they, after they looked at all the evidence there, they recommended a triple bypass, and that's opening up the chest and removing the blockages and putting in, I guess, veins from the leg, the lower legs. I refused the open heart surgery. I said I was going to get chelation. This is what I told the doctors. So the doctors came and they triple teamed me. 3 doctors came in the room and they tried to convince me that I should get the open heart surgery. But I knew about the chelation, which I had found about, I had found out about in the maybe the mid to late 80s. Was the first information. And then in the mid 90s, I found out some more information about this chelation therapy. And I said to myself, well, I guess it's my turn. And so I told the doctors no, and they tried to convince me. They said there is no scientific evidence that this chelation works. There's just nothing there. It doesn't work. And they tried to over and over again convince me of that. And I said, well, the reason why you don't have any evidence is because all the journals that you have, all the medical journals, they don't allow the information on chelation therapy to be published in those journals. And that's why the doctors don't know anything about it. And and it's also not mainstream medical. It's a lot cheaper than going through a bypass surgery, a much, much cheaper. So that's another reason why they don't, you know, consider chelation therapy a viable form of you know, medication there. Anyway, I refused the open heart surgery, and they, like I said, they triple teamed me. And I explained to him what I was going to do and why I was going to do it. And I checked myself out of the hospital, and the doctors had me sign a document which had a huge letters at the top of this one-page document. And I guess the letters, 3 letters about an inch high, very bold, and it said AMA. And at first I thought American Medical But no, that's not what it meant. It meant against medical advice. So I signed that because I was going against their medical advice. I walked out of the hospital. I tried to get down to Magaziner because Magaziner's office, Dr. Magaziner, who did the chelation therapy in the story I told you before, he only lived maybe 10 miles. His office was only about 10 miles from where I used to live down in New Jersey. So I knew about that and where he was and all that. And so we tried to contact Dr. Magaziner, and we found out that he was all booked up and he could not take me at the time. So my 2 sons at that time had moved to Tennessee, and they said there was a doctor down there that did chelation therapy. And it was down in Johnson City, Tennessee, and it was called The Castle. So we made an appointment there. My son came and picked me up, and we drove all the way down to Tennessee. And the doctor saw me. He did some blood work. I think I may have had a CAT scan there as well to verify the blockages in the arteries. And he decided that I was a candidate for chelation therapy. So I did that. That's what I did. Let's see what else. And the chelation therapy is, it is tailored to the specific type of problem that you've got. If you've got a stroke or heart disease or macular degeneration or arthritis or heavy metals, they tailor it. They can modify it a little bit to be more effective for the specific needs that you actually have. So that's what he did for me. And I got the incubation therapy down there, and in
How
Johns.
often did you go?
Would say that again.
How often did you go?
Oh, that's what I was just getting into. I had 30 infusions over two per week over a 4 month period. So I was down in Tennessee for about 5 months altogether, and the cost of the chelation therapy. Let's see, when I was treated, now that was back in 2005, so that was some years ago, it cost approximately $110 per infusion, with 30 infusions at two infusions per week for 4 months. So the cost was a little over $3,000, about $3,300 over about that 4 month period. And the insurance does not cover it. So insurance did not cover it, so it was all out of pocket, basically. And so, but now I was looking up, I did a little research, and I think the same thing might cost about $5,000 today for I think an equivalent dosage and all that. So it might be about 5,000. So but I'm not 100% sure on that. But just something I read. So and let me go to. Okay, so it's been approximately 17 years since I had the heart attack and since I had the chelation therapy. And up until recently, I had no other problems, no symptoms at all until 2022. Then I had the second heart attack. But as part of the chelation, they recommend that you get a maintenance dose. Like I said, a maintenance dose or a follow-up once a month for with the chelation. So yeah, just to keep the arteries clean. So once a month. And I wanted to do that. So I went to a doctor up in New York, not too far from where I live, and he interviewed me and all that and asked why I wanted it. And I told him that I was down in Tennessee and I got chelation down there for a heart attack and clearing of the arteries. And he said, oh, sorry, I can't help you because I can only give you by law in New York, the state of New York, that was back then. I don't know whether it's changed since then or not. But back then, they could only give you chelation therapy for heavy metals
Wow.
and nothing for stroke or heart attacks or anything else like that, of just heavy metals. And that's what it originated as a treatment for chelating heavy metals out of a body for people that worked in factories and mines and all that, and they breathed in the heavy metals and they had it throughout their system. That's how it was developed back in the 1950s. And that's all you could do up in New York. Whereas down in New Jersey and Tennessee, you could get it for a variety of reasons. And how I found that out is I was sitting in the waiting room with the drip in my arm. I saw other people there and we got to talking and they would tell me that, oh, they had a stroke or this one had a heart attack or that one had macular degeneration or arthritis. And that's what they were getting it for, not just heavy metals. So that was, that's how that worked out. I tried to follow, like I said, I tried to follow up with the chelation to get the monthly doses, but I would have had to go on down to New Jersey because, like I said, I was up in New York at the time to get the monthly chelation, and I would have had to go to probably Doctor Magazine or down in New Jersey, and so I was only on Social Security at the time. So, well, no, at that time I wasn't on Social Security, but we were tight for money. So, even money wise, I probably couldn't afford it, and traveling down there once a month, I probably couldn't have done that either. So that's why I never got the monthly dose, maintenance dose of the chelation therapy, which if I can get it together, I am going to go back and get some more chelation. And that's what I'm going to do. I know out here, I'm in Indianapolis right now, living at my son's house for temporarily, and they do have people out here that do chelation therapy. So if I had the opportunity, I might even do it out here. So there is also a number of things that can be done right now for heavy metals, for the different circulation problems that you've got. One is the cilantro, and that is a leafy little vegetable which you can take, and that is good for removing mercury, lead, and aluminum from the artery system. Another one is Brazil nuts. It reduces LDL cholesterol levels. Apple cider vinegar, which I didn't realize, but they say apple cider vinegar is not as strong as the EDTA, but it is a good daily regimen for removing heavy metals and probably some of the other problems with stroke and heart attack and all that. Then there's vitamin C, which reduces LDL levels and keeps arteries flexible. Then there's another one I take is hawthorn berry. And it treats high blood pressure, heart disease, high cholesterol, and a coronary artery blood flow, and it improves circulation. Then cayenne pepper, it helps the circulatory system, controls blood flow, strengthens the heart, the arteries, the capillaries, and the nerves. Ginger is an anti-hypertensive, anti-platelet, also has anti-platelet effects. So that can help, just ginger is itself. Garlic helps control cholesterol. Onion helps control cholesterol and breaks down blood, lowers the risk of heart disease and stroke with clots, from clots. Cinnamon lowers the blood sugar levels, controls cholesterol, and triglyceride levels as well. Gota Cola is a atherosclerosis, controls sclerosis, which is a fatty deposits called plaque that get on your arm. Now, valerian reduces stress and anxiety. And like I said, I had a lot of stress when I had that first heart attack, and I think that contributed to the heart attack. But even valerian might help. Coconut oil helps lower LDL and increases HDL. Turkey tail is also called, that's the common name, is Coriolis versicolor. And that is a super immune booster. And it's called turkey tail. And it's a mushroom that grows on dead tree stumps and things like that. And it grows like a turkey tail. It fans out like a turkey tail. And it has different colorations on it like a turkey tail does. That's why they call it turkey tail, because it looks like a turkey tail. But it is a super immune booster. And I'm taking that as well. Magnesium supports heart and nerve health. And now another one I'm taking is a supplement that actually does the same thing as chelation. It's called cardio chelate with EDTA. So it's a chelation supplement that also you would take a multi mineral supplement with it, because the chelation can remove a lot of the minerals from your body. So you have to keep those replaced. So you would take a multi mineral supplement to go along with that to replace the minerals that the chelation would take out. MSM is an antioxidant, and it shields the cardiac cells from inflammation. So all those things I'm either taking now or have taken recently, and they help as well. For a while there, I hadn't been taking a lot of this stuff, and that's why I think I ended up having some more problems, because I didn't get the maintenance dose of the chelation, and I wasn't, because of the lifestyle and where I was living and what was going on, I just wasn't taking a lot of these vitamins and minerals and supplements at that particular time. And I think that's one reason why I had problems with second and third heart attack. But I think that is pretty much it.
Bob, I don't know if I'm on mute. It's Marietta. Have you ever heard of CoQ10?
Yeah, CoQ10?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one that I'm taking. In fact, I think Connie is going to mention that one if she gets a chance to talk, I think. And serosine peptase, I think, is that Serazine?
Phosphoserine choline or phosphatidylcholine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so yeah, so CoQ10, I've taken that off and on.
Do you take the ubiquinol, Bob?
No,
rather than the CoQ10?
No, I haven't had that one. No.
Because as we get older, it's a better supplement than the CoQ10. It's Connie could probably tell you what it's supercharged CoQ10, I guess.
Oh yeah, ubiquitol.
Well, ubiquinol is a more usable form of CoQ10. So that's the form that we use here.
How do you spell that?
UbiQuinol.
Okay.
And that's also 200 milligrams, which you're probably taking of CoQ10.
Yeah. Yeah, I take a liquid form of CoQ10. I forgot to put that on my list. That's in the refrigerator. That's why I forgot to put it on my list. Yeah. So,
you were taking these supplements after you got back from chelation for a while, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And then just through all the stress and everything with my wife, and with the MCS and moving up to New York and taking care of the farm and, you know, the lack of money and all that. I think I just, I just stopped taking some of it. And, but that could have helped. That could have helped. But as it was, I went 17 years before the second heart attack. And if I had done some more of that stuff, I probably would have avoided that second one.
How are you feeling nowadays?
I'm feeling great. I feel like normal. Okay. And I go for walks. In fact, right after we're done here, I have to go walk the next door neighbor dogs. And I walk those probably a mile around the block, a big block here. It's about a mile. And so I walk them. Then I walk my son's dog at night. We take them for the same walk, the same mile. And so I'm doing that. I'm doing some mild exercises. And my appetite has come back, whereas I had lost my appetite and I was down to like 125 pounds.
Ooh, wow.
I was originally up around 150, 155. And so due to lack of appetite, I wasn't eating as much. And now I'm back up to 140 pounds.
Nice.
Hopefully I can get back up even more than that, back up into the 150 range, I guess. I'm about 6 feet tall, so
yeah.
150, 55, you know, that's about what I've been most of my life.
Were there any side effects at all to the EDTA?
No, even though in some of the, if you do a Google search on it, there'll be a lot of cautions on there against doing EDTA, but I think that's because the mainstream medical does not accept it, and they'll try and find reasons why you shouldn't do it. They say there's a number of side effects like stomach aches, cramps, and headaches, and all kinds of things. I had no problems whatsoever with any of that.
Here in Connecticut, they tried to take my doctor's license away for doing chelation therapy for heart patients.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, really? They said she wasn't following standard protocols.
There you go.
But she won her case because there were no standard protocols for her to follow.
Right,
good for her. Yeah.
Yeah, I have the same doctor, and I also did chelation for chemical sensitivities.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I did a little too.
Yeah.
Did that work?
I had been going to Yale just to keep me employed and to have some regular MD, you know, sign the paperwork. And they said I would never get better, but that was part of it. Part of it was removing my amalgams. Part of it was eating organic food. You know, it was detoxing in general. But when I had the EDTA challenge, when they first pulled the heavy metals out in your blood, because the heavy metals don't stay in your blood very long, only about 2 weeks when you are exposed, and then the heavy metals go deeper into your tissue and into the sulfur-loving parts of your brain and organs that have sulfur. They're attracted to the sulfur. So they do this initial chelation, and they get, you probably did that. They analyze what heavy metals you have and how many you have, a percentage. And so I was like over the top. And I only had 5 EDTA chelations. And I think, I don't know, Sue, if you did that too, but with Dr. Sika, the DMPS, I remember that also. That was part of the chelation. I don't remember what the DMPS stood for. But I only had about 8 chelations, and then my levels came way down really fast.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that with the heavy metals. Probably a lot less infusions for that. Did you get infusions, was it?
Yes.
And did you have MCS?
Yes.
Okay. That's what my wife had. So
if we know what you went through. Thank you for your story. It was a living hell, and mine was probably lasted about 15 to 20 years. And the doctors, everybody said, the good news is you're not going to die. The bad news is you're not going to die. And then that puts you in more of a depression. And the doctors at Yale said that I would never get better. And they have a panel of doctors. And they would meet, you know, every 6 months about each client. And know what, you're never going to get better. But what happened was my doctor wouldn't let me go back to work. I kept taking leave of absences and felt better because I was getting exposures at work. And then they just said, no, you're never going to get better. And I proved them wrong. I eventually did get better with these leaves and with detoxing and having the most pure water in the world. And then he said to me, the father of MCS, chemical sensitivities, who traveled the world, he said, one time, he said, the last time I saw him, he said, how did you get better? And I said, well, I gradually detoxed. And he said, I have been looking for 25, 30 years for one system that was not working properly. And he stormed out of the office and he left Yale and went to California.
Wow. That was Dr. Cullen, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't call him the father of MC. I would call Dr. Ray. He did more to heal people.
He coined the term.
Oh, he called himself.
Yeah. He called himself father of MCS. And that's because that was his initials. Mark Cullen. And then, I don't know, somebody said it had to do with his initials.
He's the one that came up with the term.
He's the one that came up with the initial exposure.
It was probably cumulative, but I was working in a public school when I just went off the edge. I was an art teacher, and they put me in a basement, and it was next to the transformer room. And I'm sure it had PCBs because the company came in and asked me a few questions after I went to the doctors and complained, and they were highly alerted. And during the summer on vacation, they replaced it and didn't tell me, but I'm sure there were PCBs. Across the hall was oil and gas. And then down the hall, the custodians had cans of paint left open, mm-hmm. and they were renovating. And that's when my bucket became full and I crashed.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because like Mike said in my story, my wife got it in one day. She got exposed to the doors van. And from that very day, she was never the same person. She got a little better when we moved up to New York, because we were out in the middle of nowhere and the air was clean, and there wasn't any suburban areas around us where there would be a lot of chemicals and pollution and all that. So she did get better, but still had some problems.
Yeah, mine happened overnight too, to a doors van exposure. I became chemically sensitive like that.
Oh, okay.
And see, this Zoom is full of chemically sensitive people because they're friends of mine.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, but Nancy, didn't you have a Durspan experience? I thought you did.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, there were pesticides. They were spraying pesticides during school with the children and I in the building. And I remember on one occasion, it was all hush hush, you know, parents didn't know about it. Teachers didn't know about it. They thought I was crazy. But when this started getting really hot and heavy and they were trying to fire me and harass me and everything, after school, when the secretary and the principal weren't in the office, the door was still open for us to get our mail. And there were binders there that by law, you are allowed to see what was reported with the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew where that binder was, and I would look at it and I would make copies of it on their copy machine. And I found out some very good information. I mean, there was a date that the kids were going on the school bus, and they had the kids exit the school to enter the school buses. And at the same time, the pesticide guy came because it was considered an emergency. There was a beehive in the tree in front of the school near where the school buses were. So they came and they were spraying that tree as the kids were exiting the building. And the only way I know that is because they would hide the trucks from me. I was in the back and they had the truck in the front because they didn't want to deal with me. But a parent was there and a parent complained, and they wrote that in the book.
Mm.
So there was, yeah, they were spraying all around, all around.
And three quick facts about Durspan. Number one, it's an organophosphate and its mechanism is the same as sarin nerve gas. Number two, at this time, between like 1986 and 1994 or so, it was the most widely used insecticide in the country. And if you had your house sprayed for ants or roaches or anything, that was probably Durspan. And after my son was poisoned at school with Durspan and he became chemically sensitive, I got a coalition of 200 poison people together, and we petitioned and had a petition drive for the EPA to take it off the market for residential use. And Connie and Bob and myself and some others went down to Washington, testified before the EPA to get it off the market, came off in the year 2000.
Yeah. The one experience Connie had, we were still living in the house at the time, and the neighbor right across the street from us, he wanted to put sod down. So he got this chemical and he sprayed his lawn with this chemical to kill all the grass in the front yard and backyard so he could sod the whole thing. Then the neighbor, and this is all happening at the same time, the neighbor two doors down from us got a termite treatment on his house. We're using Durspan. And then at the same time, we still had the effects of the Durspan in our house. And then on the highway, which is about less than eighth of a mile behind us where we live, they were spraying the road there for the weeds alongside the road, all up and down the highway. So all that was going on all at the same time, and she just went ballistic. And I was still working at the time at my engineering jobs, and so I just put her in the car, packed up some clothes, and I drove her down to Tennessee, dropped her off at my son's house, because I had to continue working, you know, to maintain the house and everything, and dropped her off at my son's house, and she was probably there for a couple months until things cleared out. But that's all I could do, was just take her down and drop her off right at that point. And that's a 12-hour drive, I guess. I guess it's 12 hours or something like that, down and back.
She's so lucky she had you. She's lucky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I stuck it out.
Good for you.
Yeah, that was not easy.
But she is no longer with us. She passed away in 2013 from ovarian cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I'm not sure whether that is a byproduct kind of the Durspan, the MCS, because the emotions in the person get so overwhelmed and so out of control. And then that disrupts the chemical makeup in your body. And then I think, from what I understand, is that that can allow cancers to form. Hmm. And so if you have...
Sue, I don't know if you were told, but when I first really got diagnosed with MCS, I didn't know what it was. It was going on for years before I was even diagnosed. I kept calling it sick building syndrome. Hmm. And Then I think at one of our MCS meetings, Sue, that we used to have in Connecticut, right? Then somebody said, well, we have a higher incidence of cancer. And that makes sense because when we have heavy metals in our body, it affects what the mitochondria can do. And the mitochondria is the energy producing part of the cell, and the cell cannot get its nutrients. And then you have cells that are deformed or dying. So, it's synergistic. It all makes sense.
I wanted to let let's see. Jennifer, you were was your Jennifer also has MCS. What was your initial?
I noticed my chemical sensitivity after becoming ill with chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome. So there wasn't any one incident, I think. It just seemed like once I was diagnosed with that and my health just went out the window, the chemical sensitivities became obvious after that. Cigarette smoke was one of the worst. We could be driving down the interstate, and I could tell you if the person in the car in front of us was smoking a cigarette. And I would get a headache that would last for weeks often with just an exposure of something like that.
Did you say it coincided with you being diagnosed with chronic fatigue, and was it fibromyalgia too, or?
Well, it's chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome is one of
Oh.
the names. Fibromyalgia is a subset of that and is part of that.
Well, the three th chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and chemical sensitivity, they're like three things that come from the same exposures.
And I don't, I've never really been able to identify. I mean, the day that I got sick, I was at a continuing legal education course. And felt like I got the flu and I never recovered. Just so I can't identify a particular thing or a particular incident or exposure to anything. I don't really know.
It could just be toxic load, and your body cannot keep up with detoxing. And then it affects your hormones, it affects your pituitary and thyroid gland, and your production of thyroid hormone. And that, I'm finding, that can cause fibromyalgia, the inflammation, the MCS. My theory is MCS, but people with all these symptoms, unexplained symptoms, and it seems to be, from a book I'm reading, the most underdiagnosed condition is th hypothyroidism, and causes all of these manifestations. That's a theory of mine. I don't have conclusive evidence. I haven't read papers on that.
Well, and I would just add to for my situation, I was throughout law school and the first several years of being a lawyer, I lived at the office, I lived at school. It was there were 80-hour work weeks every single week after week after week. And my theory was that my body was just exhausted. It just said, enough. You can't keep doing this. And I've just never recovered from that.
Well, I think before my MCS, I was feeling fatigue, and I was exhausted, and I kept pushing because I wasn't getting help from anybody in my family, and I had two kids to support. And I just like a I felt like a robot. I would roll out of bed, go to work, come back, do what I had to do, roll out of bed every day, and then I did crash after that. And again, I think that could be that's attributed to a thyroid, underactive thyroid, because you burn out your adrenals, and then it affects your thyroid.
Well, if you remember our Zoom on thyroid, hypothyroid, it's usually because of Hashimoto's, an autoimmune disease. And so what comes first, the chicken or the egg kind of thing?
Well, yeah, everybody's bodies react differently and have different tolerance levels of stress. Could be emotional stress, it could be chemical stress, it could be physical stress. where our bodies just say enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
It can't function anymore chemically and hormonally. It can't keep up with it.
Well, okay. Thanks, Monica. Thanks for coming. So,
quick question. Yeah. Does anyone know what happened with the Roundup? I thought I heard there was a lawsuit. They were supposed to get it off the market by 2023. Mm. I think it's still on the market. Does anybody
Wouldn't
know?
Wouldn't that be nice? That yeah, there were millions of dollars given out in lawsuit cases, and it was all cancer caused by Roundup. And of course, the EPA won't do anything. They were like, oh, couldn't be. But the court cases, because there's discovery and there's evidence presented in court, the juries all awarded the plaintiffs damages because they got cancer from Roundup. And as a result, Monsanto was going broke. And so Bayer, which is a chemical pharmaceutical company my husband used to work for in Connecticut, they bought Monsanto. So now Bayer is the parent company, and now they're stuck with all these payouts, and there's even more court cases going. But whether the EPA, does anybody else believe that the EPA, CDC, or FDA, or any of those agencies actually protect us? Raise your hand. They are merged with the industry.
Add the FCC to that one.
FCC, okay. right.
I saw Roundup for sale in, I think it was BJ's not too long ago. So they haven't taken it.
No, they're not taking it off the market.
Ugh. Well, how come
I'd like something that I can spray down here, because we have some nasty bugs. And I just cannot. Connie and I talked about this, and so far I've done nothing. But I guess before I leave here and go back up north, I need to do something. But I don't know what.
I would just do borax, diatomaceous earth. Yeah. That stuff kill. If you can mix it with a bait that something they like to eat.
Yeah. I have my lizards around here, and I love them because they catch all the bugs.
Well, that's your problem. You're afraid of killing your lizards.
I don't want to hurt my lizards. they're so cute. They really are.
What about peppermint oil?
What?
Peppermint oil.
That will repel them. Essential oils repel them, but you really, sorry, you have to kill them.
Well, that's what I was thinking is, how do you get the lizards away while you put on the diatomaceous earth, et cetera?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, so you want to put the peppermint oil all around your house, and then wait and do the diatomaceous earth, and then put something that attracts them around your neighbor's homes.
No, I like my neighbors.
Yeah, she's best friends with her neighbor.
Well, then the lizards would go to the neighbor's house.
Well, I want him here.
Well, when you come back, but you're going north. So when you come back, they'll be back again. The diatomaceous earth doesn't last that long.
Well, yeah. Connie, diatomaceous earth, you said, won't bother the lizards, right?
I don't think that the diatomaceous earth, because it dries out it scratches the exoskeleton of the insect.
Of insects.
They dry out. That's its mechanism. So I don't think, I just don't know if it's wet, if it would work. So
yeah no. Okay.
Do we have any more questions for Bob?
I do.
Okay, so I
have a comment and a question. My comment is, I'm just in awe of your courage for walking out of that hospital with all those doctors pressuring you in the big AMA. I can imagine how intense that must have been, and how they tried to terrify you that you were going to die in a week if you didn't have the surgery.
Mm-hmm. Right. That, and I remember as I was walking out of the hospital towards the car, I'm thinking to myself, this may be one of the last decisions I ever made, you know, and I did it.
What? You probably had that courage because you already had that prior knowledge. You educated yourself, and you knew how they were handling your wife's case, and that they weren't helping her there. And you had, you know, those other people that were witness to you had confidence that the other thing would work, the EDTA.
And that's where I believe the Lord kind of led me. Like 20 years before the heart attack, I was finding out about this information. And, you know, I didn't think I'd ever need it. I was going to tell other people about it. But then, in fact, I think I did. I think I did tell other people about it. And then I find out, well, I guess it's my turn.
Now, how did you get through, my question is, how did you get through the second heart attack? What was that like?
The second heart attack?
Yeah.
That was, again, no symptoms whatsoever, except for heavy breathing. And I was, oh, in fact, no, excuse me, no symptoms whatsoever. I was down in New Jersey, and I was visiting a friend. He's a chiropractor who's down in New Jersey, near where I used to live. And I was visiting them, and he was doing his practice. I think it was probably on a Saturday or something like that. And he had hours. So his wife and I, we went to breakfast in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We went to breakfast. Then we went up into Pennsylvania to a store up there in northeastern Pennsylvania. And then from there, we drove back down to New Jersey, and we went to Costco's. We were in the Costco coffee aisle. I was pushing the cart. She was doing the shopping. I was pushing the cart. And all of a sudden, she said, I just fell backwards, hit my head on the floor, and boom,
oh,
out.
Wow.
Wow.
And then they, and here again, the Lord provides. There happened to be a nurse on that very aisle, and she started doing the respiratory stuff, you know, the cardiac stuff. And there happened also to be at the end of that aisle one of the defibrillators. So they got the defibrillator and yep, with the nurse working on me and all that. And then they called 911 and the EMTs came. And I think my heart stopped three times while I was in Costco.
Wow.
And
wow.
They got me out into the EMT vehicle. And I think it stopped one time out there. So four times, I think my heart had stopped.
So
they
this was an electrical back type of heart attack? It was an electrical problem in your heart?
Yeah, oh, yeah. There was also clogged arteries, because at that point I went to a hospital in New Jersey, and they put in three stents, and I had no problem at that point. You know, I said, just go for it. You know, I couldn't do anything else. I said, just do the stents. They had also mentioned open heart surgery. I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. So I had allowed them to do the stents. They put three stents in, and they said I had three clogged arteries.
What year was this?
I think it was 2002. Hang on, let me put the dog out here.
Well, while we're waiting, I wanted to make a comment. Bob was talking about cider vinegar. Hmm. And then I just heard a few days ago that a Native American I was talking with, and he's traveled the world, and he's up on, you know, a lot of things going on in the world and natural things. He mentioned that don't use Bragg products, BRAGG. You know, they put out those amino acids and cider vinegars. What he said is that, what's his name? Now it just left my mind. Bill Gates owns that company.
Yeah.
And that's Bill Gates is one of those that's trying to push the world into, you know, take away our rights and take away our property and take mm-hmm. away the money system and so forth.
I think they use their olive oil, their organic olive oil.
Mm. Look it up. I didn't look it up. He told me a couple of days ago.
But Bragg's vinegar is the one I always used in the past. Mm. And I heard that about Bill Gates, and so I don't know what brand to go to now, but I'm sure
there's he's deceased, but I think the company still exists. My natural pharmacologist used to sell Dr. something or other. I think it's from Vermont, the company.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't think it was Dr. Bronner. No, I think it was Dr. Something else. I haven't used it in a long time.
If you can send me a link to it, Nancy, that would be good.
Okay.
Okay.
I just need to comment. I have a book that says normal is a setting on the dryer.
Yeah, I never wanted to be normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, one time I was at an elementary school concert for my kids, and there was a music concert, and there was parking all around the building. So we parked around the back, and my son's best friend's mother, she was there, and everybody was exiting at the same time through a narrow area, and they were all going forward, and I'm going against the grain, and I'm passing her, and she goes, "Nancy, you always go against the grain." I'm like, I'm okay doing that because I need to do. I'm not a follower. I mean, I'm not a rebel, but you know, I make up my own decisions.
Right. Think for yourself. Bob,
Yeah.
I think you misspoke because I don't think you had the second heart attack in 2002. It wasn't it 22?
Oh yeah, 20, then, that's what I meant, 22.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Just checking.
Yeah. Thanks for checking on that.
Well, we're glad that everything, you know, divinely or whatever, worked out for you. And yeah, it's an amazing journey, and
Yeah,
it's hard, it's difficult.
it is. It certainly is.
I feel like I'm struggling every day to just keep alive in this system, this world that we, this toxic world, this toxic energy, this. It's really difficult to live these days. I think back how my parents' lives were and what my children's lives are going to be and my grandchildren. And it's getting harder and harder just to, you know, I used to feel like I was sinking, you know, 20 years ago, but it just keeps getting harder and harder and more difficult. And I just keep educating myself to try to keep up with the latest way to combat all of that negativity of toxins and so forth.
I really think that this is such a great group. I just love everybody in this group. And we're all, you know, trying to solve our own issues using, you know, just educating ourselves. And everybody, it's amazing how I think I've learned from everybody that comes, you know, that you all have information that people should know about and use. So
Well,
kudos.
thanks for putting the group together.
Well, this was
Yes.
Jean's idea actually, and it's Jean's Zoom account.
Oh, thank you, Jean. But it takes
Yes,
everybody. You know, it takes
it
everybody to
does.
pull together.
Yep.
I was just going to
Yeah, we
remind
all have.
everybody. I was going to remind everybody about the signal groups you want to join.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Say that you had two heart attacks, or did you have three?
There's actually three, because I had the other one in, I guess it was 2020, 22, and then where they put the three stents in, and then like less than a year later, I had another issue where I had heavy breathing. That's the only symptoms I get is shortness of breath, and or just collapsing. But they went in for the third one, and that was earlier in 2023, around March. I had a breathing issue. I went to the hospital, and they said I was having a heart attack. And what did they do? Oh, they said that two of the stents they put in the previous heart attack that I had were clogged up already, and it only had been a year or a little more than a year in between, and two of
Wow.
those stents were supposedly clogged up. So they said they cleaned them out, but I'm a little concerned about getting this clogging back again, you know, in my artery.
What
So
happens with chelation when you have stents? Does it clean out the
hang on a second. I think it probably does, but I'm not sure. I've never talked about that to the doctor, you know, with stents and all that. So I
And
don't
you
know.
had bypass, right?
No, I refused bypass.
Oh, good. Good.
No, that's what I refused in the first heart attack, and even the second one. I think the second one they had mentioned it, and I said, "No, nah, I don't think I want to do that." So I just let him do the stents, which I would have refused if I was prepared to go for more chelation. I would have refused that as well, but it just didn't work out that way. So.
Do you take any enzymes like serapeptase or natokinase?
Not those yet. Sarah Pepe's, that's one that Kanya told me about, but I just haven't gotten it yet. But I have been taking for the last, I guess, 2 months, this chelation supplement. So I'm going to continue taking that, and I'm going to try and get the serrapeptase and anything else I can take to keep my arteries clean.
So have you ever been told, I've been told that my blood is sticky, and there's a test that they can do for that, and I can't remember offhand what that is. Have you ever been told that your blood is sticky or thinner, or I mean,
I thicker? Think it's thickened. Thickened is what I've been told. I remember one time back when I was working at one of my engineering companies, they would come in every year and take blood from people. You know, so anybody that wanted to volunteer to give blood, and so I volunteered. But then when they tried to take the blood, they refused because my blood was too thick and it wasn't coming out. So I think what happens is you've got to be hydrated enough to keep your blood thin.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things, because I know years ago, nobody ever drank water like they do today, you know, bottles and thermoses. And there was never anybody drinking water like that years ago. So it was never part of our regime to drink a lot of water. You didn't get a lot of water with your meals when you went to eat and all that, at least from my recollection. Nobody ever carried a bottle of water around with them. Whereas today, everybody's carrying these bottles of water and have thermoses and all that. So I wasn't probably hydrated like I should be. I like coffee, and that's a diuretic. So that's getting rid of the water, the fluids in my body. So maybe that's what was making my blood thicker.
Does your doctor check your fibrinogen levels?
I don't know.
It's a clotting factor in your blood, and mine is high, and that's why I take natokinase. I was taking serrapeptase, but it wasn't strong enough. I had to go with the natokinase, and then I got it down.
Natokinase?
Yeah.
Natokinase is an alternative to serrapeptase. It's more effective, but more expensive.
But more expensive. Are you going to put that in your notes?
Yeah.
You'll put that in your notes? Okay.
Yeah, but checking the fibrinogen levels, that might be a good idea. I don't know.
Yeah, because that's a clotting factor. It makes your blood thick if you have high fibrinogen.
Yeah. I know some of the supplements, Jennifer. Some of the supplements I mentioned deal with that, you know, about the clotting factor and all that stuff, but mm-hmm. it might be better to have
it's a way to monitor with what you're taking and what you're doing is working.
Yeah.
Fibrinogen should go down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I should, when they do blood tests and all that, I should make sure that they check for that.
Yeah, there's a very comprehensive laboratory in Boston called Boston Heart Diagnostics. And they'll, from your blood, they will do pages and pages of report for you and your physician. And it's expensive, but what they do, and they'll even tell you, if you can't afford it, just sign a paper, say you can't afford it, and they'll waive the expense. I've done it twice.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I wonder if Social Security covers that, Medicare.
Not, but I mean, you can go on their website, Boston Heart Diagnostics Laboratories or whatever it is, Boston Heart.
Mm.
Very, very comprehensive. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, the amount of intake of liquids that we get to hydrate us as we get older is important, but I know that it just goes through me and I could still have thicker, sticky blood. So that helps to some degree, but it probably means there's also inflammation going on. You know, like Sue said, the fibrinogen level. And I was also thinking, what are the doctors now telling you to do to go forward? I know sonogram, I do that every once in a while with, I talked to Connie about it, the Lifeline people that you go to, they circulate around and you have to pay out of pocket, but it's not that expensive. And they can do the sonogram on your arteries.
Oh, okay.
Medicare covers that.
Oh, Medicare covers that?
And the carotids, yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Because that can actually tell you if your arteries are getting clogged?
Yes.
Without a dye in your blood, right?
Right. They check your carotid arteries, which they reflect the state of your heart your coronary arteries. They also check your femoral arteries and your aorta.
And abdominal?
Yeah,
the abdominal aorta. And they do a bone density and, oh, they check for AFib.
Oh, okay.
And the whole thing's like $120. So I have that done like every 3 to 5 years.
That sounds like a good one to do.
And they keep track of it for you. They'll send you notices and say it's time for your visit. So, you know, depending on if you want to make an appointment.
Oh, okay.
And they'll travel around. So you pick a location and a time that's good for you.
Yeah, that sounds good. That does concern me about the blood circulation in the heart and the buildup of the plaque and all that.
I have something to say about water, drinking all that water. I think Connie knows about this. Is exclusion zone water or easy water?
Some water. Yeah,
so exclusion zone water is like natural spring water has a lot of this, or there's different ways you can.
Yeah, you can just stir it around or add certain minerals to it.
Or you can.
So it's better. Better absorbed.
Yeah. Connie, I'm not done.
I'm sorry.
I didn't say you know about this. So
Connie has the button.
Okay. So another way to get exclusion zone water is to eat vegetables, raw vegetables that have high water content, like celery. You can get the exclusion zone water that way. And the exclusion zone water will make the insides of your blood vessels slippery, and they might help a little bit with this issue. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Sorry, Liz.
Yay. Raw. Okay, raw celery.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I like to do too. Is I haven't done it lately, but juicing carrots and celery, and
be careful with juicing. Oh my God.
Another rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, just eat the celery, and don't juice any kale, and especially not spinach.
Stay away from spinach. Oh my God.
Oh really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't eat spinach anyway. I eat broccoli and cauliflower. And green beans, broccoli, cauliflower, and green beans. That's
it. Well, then kale is in that category, right? Kale and collards.
No, kale is okay.
Okay.
Collards are okay. Arugula, all the brassicas are okay. It's just spinach and beet greens.
Hmm.
They fed beet greens to rats, and the rats died from the oxalates. Swiss chard is bad. Yeah.
Oh, all my
really. I like Swiss chard.
Good.
And beet greens. Yeah.
Yeah.
My daughter got really sick from the kale. Remember? I'd have to find out from her exactly what happened. But I mean, she was eating her own kale out of her own organic garden, and she was a mess. So
every plant produces a toxin so that animals don't eat it.
Yeah.
Some of them have, like everybody knows about gluten and lectins and that stuff, but your body can break down gluten and lectins eventually. It cannot break down oxalates.
Okay.
And they're like little needles that are coming out of my skin and my ears. And oh my gosh, it's awful.
Oh, so is that why there's this rumor about when people die and then there's autopsies, they're finding fibers coming out of people's skin?
That was the COVID, wasn't it?
About the COVID shot, are you? It's the consistency of calamari or squid, and it's like 2-3 feet in length. It's the entire length of the artery, and they're pulling this stuff out of dead people.
Yeah, the clots, right?
Yeah.
They're 2 to 3 feet long, some of them.
Yeah. And they're not blood. They're white, these white things.
Yeah.
But Nancy, aren't you talking about the things that come out of the skin, the threads, the morgellons?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's another thing.
Yeah.
I guess, you know.
We're being bombarded by so many things.
Yeah.
I know. That's why we never run out of subjects.
Right. Yeah, so that's a good segue right into the oxalates in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
You're going to tell us some more ways to get exclusion zone water. besides the celery and the natural spring water.
No, you go ahead.
No, because I can't think of them, but you can probably think of them. And I think it's a really good thing to know.
I had not gotten that deep into that.
Okay.
I just started adding electrolytes to my water. And when I remember, I stir it with a wooden spoon before, you know, I put it in the jug. I think you're talking about the same thing as structured water, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. I think it's worth looking it up because I think there's ways to make it that are cost-free, that don't cost anything and are simple. And I think it's pretty important.
And there's another trick you can do with a strong magnet too.
Okay.
I think Bob's wife, Connie, wasn't she setting the water on a magnet?
Yes. Yeah. And my chiropractor friend does that with just about all his food. He puts it on a magnet. That's supposed to change the molecular structure somehow, I think.
I have like a metallic type business card that I got from the company BioPro that I used to sell. And I just located it again, and I'm putting it under my dish where I put my supplements for the day. And it's not a magnet, but it's zero point energy, it's called. But I used to put that under my plate of food. And the claim was it was supposed to balance everything molecularly, something like that. So it's at zero point, like at the best. It's not, I don't know. I don't understand the whole thing, but I did use that under my plate of food and let it sit there for at least 5 minutes, and the food did taste better.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you say what that is again? Like put it in the chat or
something? I think the company changed names, but it's BioPro was technology. It's right over here. I can show it to you.
Oh, cool.
Bob, is it just a regular magnet that your chiropractor uses?
Yes.
Is it a big, strong one, or just?
I think it's I think it's fairly big and strong. I guess it. I don't know. It might be kind of like that, and so he can set plates and bottles and things on top of it. And I never really got too much into it. I know he explained it to me one time, but I think it's got to do something with the molecular structure and all that.
Is it a big magnet?
Yeah, it's fairly big. Yeah.
And is it a strong magnet, or is it one of those sheets?
I think it's a strong magnet. Yeah.
You know, I watched this guy on YouTube who's like crazy and smart and everything, and he talked about the magnet and how he puts it underwater, and then he does experiments with plants. And the plants that get the magnetic water grow better. So I actually ordered some of his magnets. They are not the same kind of magnet. It's not like an iron magnet, it's something else. And they're super strong. They're so strong that you don't put your finger between the two magnets or you'll get it squashed. So I have those magnets. I was putting them under my distilled water jug. So
expensive?
Yeah. No, these were not expensive. I think I'm going to send out the link for these.
Did you notice the difference in your water?
No, I just. But I'll tell you, I was getting leg cramps and stuff because I think I was depleting my minerals, and that's something oxalates do too. They deplete your minerals. And of course, the distilled water wouldn't have minerals in it. So now I, part of detoxing the oxalates is adding electrolytes and certain B vitamins. So yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, here's my little business card. It's very thin.
No.
It's called a smart card. Place liquids or drinks on card for 5 minutes. Place food or solids on card for 10 minutes. Bioprotechnology.com.
The food will be cold in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And don't microwave.
You know, I watch a lot of YouTube, and I was watching this guy who was doing energy testing, you know, like you pull your fingers like that.
Yeah.
And he had one of these smart cards like you're talking about. And he tested the smart card and just another credit card or something that looked just like it. And it was different. The smart card, for some reason, tested strong.
Right. Well, I used to have a necklace with the same technology, and it helped me with the EMFs. Oh, and okay. I brought it to my naturopathic doctor, and she tested it. She tests all this stuff because I was so sick at the time when I got this stuff. I couldn't chance anything going wrong. And that's when I also got this wand that works. And I keep forgetting to use it still because I'm much better. But she said, use your wand. And you can wand your food, you can wand your body and
so
bring it.
Is that back. Magnetic or is it a
no, there's technology? There's crystals in this, but it's the crystals are treated to they put it in this machine that makes it 0 point energy, and it never runs out, doesn't need batteries. And I think there's diamond dust in it too. But yeah, this wasn't cheap. This, I think, well, I was a dealer, so I probably got a deal on it. But yeah, this was by Amega, AMEGA, but they did sell or partner with somebody.
Okay, well, I'm stopping the recording now.